Wait a minute. This is Toby Reed saying if you think that Sinbad was a sailor, don't you believe it.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you think that long, slender fingers indicate artistic ability,
that Admiral Robert Peary discovered the North Pole, or that the battleship Graf Spee was scuttled on Hitler's orders, don't you believe it.
Once again, it's time for Don't You Believe It, the show that dares to explode heretofore accepted facts, starring Toby Reed, and brought to you by the makers of Almond Roca, America's finest confection. Almond Roca, the candy supreme, made only by Brown and Haven.
Long, slender fingers indicate artistic ability. Don't you believe it. According to Alice Erdlicka, world-famous anthropologist, the shape of the hands and the length of the fingers have nothing whatever to do with a person's profession or his natural abilities. This myth started four centuries ago when painter Albert Dürer exhibits a portrait of a pair of long, slender hands at prayer. Immediately, such delicate hands become fashionable throughout Europe. Then El Greco, the Spanish genius, does a self-portrait. His hands are really short and squat, but when he paints them true to life...
You fool! What will people say? Change those unartistic-looking hands of yours at once. Make your fingers look long and slender.
Later, Van Dyck paints a self-portrait. His hands, like El Greco, are short and heavy. His sponsor, Duke George, objects.
Oh, this will never do, Van Dyck. Your fingers must appear long and slender. Otherwise, people will have no confidence in you as a painter.
And for years thereafter, no artist with unattractive hands dared paint his own fingers in his self-portrait. And the belief that all the famous artists of the past had delicate hands was established. Yet a careful investigation of all branches of art proves otherwise.
Musicians,
Beethoven,
Paderewski, Stravinsky, Horowitz,
all have short, stubby fingers. Sculptors,
Michelangelo, Davidson, Whitney, Hoffman,
all have short, stubby fingers. Painters,
Titian, Van Gogh, Rembrandt, Da Vinci,
all have short, stubby fingers.
Yet despite this evidence that artists do not necessarily possess long, slender fingers, the idea still persists, even though Count Louis Heyman, foremost palmist of all time, recently asserted...
Those who possess long, slender fingers are usually very appreciative of things artistic, but nearly always they lack the ability to do things artistic themselves.
If you think there's a better candy than Almond Roca,
don't you believe it.
Almond Roca is the candy supreme. Only skilled in special care and constant insistence on quality could create a candy so fine as Almond Roca. Almond Roca has earned the name America's finest confection. Big, crisp pieces of butter-rich almond-filled candy, coated with thick milk chocolate, topped with more almonds. Yes, for a gift to be remembered, choose Almond Roca, America's finest confection. Almond Roca, made only by Brown and Haley.
Sinbad was a sailor. Don't you believe it. For centuries, the stories of Sinbad's voyages have been classics in the Arabian Nights. And today, Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. is portraying him on the screen as a romantic, adventurous sailor. Yet in real life, Sinbad was actually a gentle poet and musician, afraid of the sea. Yes, Sinbad in real life was court poet and musician to Muawiyah, the powerful governor of the Arabian province of Syria. The Arabs of those days had conquered half the world. Then suddenly, new orders come to the court from the Caliph of Baghdad, religious leader of all the Mohammedans, forbidding the Arabs to ply the oceans any longer. Governor Muawiyah consults with Sinbad.
You know my feeling, Sinbad. The future of Islam lies upon the sea.
I agree, Governor. The Caliph's decision to halt all shipping is indeed a harsh blow.
Oh, how might I persuade the Caliph to rescind such ridiculous orders?
His Majesty enjoys adventure stories, does he not?
Yes, that is true.
Well, then why not this? If someone like myself were to collect all the tales of the fabulous exploits on the sea,
yes.
Perhaps his dislike for the water might be changed to a more favorable attitude.
I see. Your plan is worth trying, Sinbad. Why not write such a book?
And so Sinbad, poet and musician, a man who never once has set foot aboard ship, authors a book of sea adventures. From the literature of every country, he borrows the most colorful and exciting yarns. And to give them a feeling of intimate authenticity, he writes in the first person, as if he himself had actually lived such experiences. Once the caliph reads this book, Sinbad is summoned to Baghdad.
After reading these adventures of yours, Sinbad, I realize my mistake.
Oh, there is glory for Islam on the sea, sire.
You have traveled in many strange lands, have you not?
Well, you see...
In your tales, I recognize the ring of truth. I shall commission you to build a new merchant fleet.
Me? Me, sire?
Yes, you, Sinbad. You are the man to lead the armadas of Islam out upon the seven seas.
Now the unexpected has happened. There's no turning back for this innocent man who has perpetrated a hoax upon the people of Arabia.
You are to be congratulated, Sinbad.
Oh, but Governor, you do not understand. What if the caliph discovers I'm not a genuine sailor?
Fear not, Sinbad. I shall command the fleets myself, in your name.
And Governor Mawbia takes over this tremendous task of rebuilding an Arabian fleet in Sinbad's name. To his banner flock hundreds of tough and two-fisted Arabian sailors. Overnight, 3,000 galleons appear in the ports of Islam, and then sail with Sinbad and the governor for destinations abroad. But after one day's sailing, Sinbad is ill, too seasick to continue, and he is put ashore on the island of Cyprus. For 1 year, he remains on Cyprus. Then the fleet returns laden with treasures. And together with the governor, he arrives in Arabia, where he is acclaimed by the unsuspecting caliph as Baghdad's first citizen. And today this man who feared the sea, this author of the popular Arabian Night stories, is immortal throughout the world as one of the most romantic and adventurous sailors of them all. An ironic memory of Sinbad, the gentle poet and musician.
Admiral Robert Peary discovered the North Pole.
Don't you believe it. While Admiral Peary did play a leading role in polar exploration at the turn of the century, he did not, however, discover the North Pole, as we were taught in school. In 1911, 2 years after Peary announced he had reached the top of the world...
Why, this is incredible. These recent reports do not coincide with Peary's discoveries. Peary has reported finding land where this expedition found none, and open water where they saw land.
That was an official spokesman for the Navy Geodetic Survey Department, the nation's cartographer.
I demand a congressional investigation. Twice now, Navy mappers have found Peary to be in error. Did he or did he not discover the North Pole?
That was Congressman R.B. Macon. And the result of his investigation can be found in the Congressional Record, January 13, 1916, page 1092. This investigation revealed these facts.
You see, Peary claims that by covering 50 miles a day, it took him 8 days to reach the pole from this point on the map, then 8 days to return.
For a man traveling on foot and pushing a loaded sledge, 50 miles a day is extraordinary time indeed.
But Peary says he was able to make excellent time because the last 100 miles were over ice that was smooth and flat.
Well, did he record the exact latitude he reached each day?
No. He admits he never took the latitude during his trip. He merely estimated it.
But I don't...
Gentlemen, may I put in a word here?
Of course, General Greeley.
By now, I think we all agree. Admiral Peary's claim to have reached the North Pole is not proved.
Soon after, the Royal Geographic Society, as well as other Arctic authorities, refused to accept Peary's claim. Actually, the North Pole had yet to be reached. Only the public continued to hail Peary for something he had not accomplished. Then, 1926. Admiral Byrd, flying with the finest scientific instruments, slowly circles a stretch of jagged, frozen wasteland below.
There he is down there, Bennett. The North Pole.
Oh, so that's it, eh?
What a kick to drop the old stars and stripes on the top of the world.
One thing's certain now. Huh? We needn't have equipped our plane with skis. It couldn't land anywhere down there.
Yeah, that's right. Where's all that smooth and flat ice that Peary claimed led up to the pole?
I'd say those rocky ridges definitely prove Peary didn't get this far.
Well, anyway, we're the first here. That means the United States' claim to ownership of the North Pole is valid at last.
And so it is that the Byrd expedition, and not Admiral Peary, was actually the first to reach the much sought after top of the world. And today, while there has never been an official retraction of Peary's claim, authoritative textbooks, one by one, are giving credit where credit is due to Admiral Richard Byrd, discoverer of the North Pole. In a moment, I'll disprove that the battleship Graf Spee was scuttled on Hitler's orders. But first, here's something no one can disprove.
America's finest confection is Almond Roca. Almond Roca is the candy supreme. Only skilled in special care and constant insistence on quality could create a candy so fine as Almond Roca. That's why Almond Roca has earned the name America's finest confection. Big, crisp pieces of butter-rich, almond-filled candy, coated with thick milk chocolate, topped with more almonds. Yes, for a gift to be remembered, choose Almond Roca. Almond Roca, made only by Brown and Haley.
Here.
Don't You Believe It is brought to you by the makers of Almond Roca, America's finest confection. Almond Roca, the candy supreme, made only by Brown and Haley.
Now, this is Toby Reed saying, if you think that the Queen Isabella pawned her jewels to finance Columbus, that the Russian Revolution was a bloody uprising, or that we won't be back on these same Columbia stations next week at this same time, don't you believe it.
Don't You Believe It, directed by Gordon T. Hughes, is written by Cran Chamberlain and Dick Sharp, with music by Del Castillo. Bob Lamont speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.